I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, it's Imogen, the voice of Imogen from Stella Firma. Today I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Waters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, that's Woe, full stop, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hello and welcome to the Stella Firma Season 2 Q&A. My name is Tim Meredith.
My name is Ben Meredith.
And we play the people on the show.
If you don't know who we play, you shouldn't be listening to this episode.
No, this would be a weird place to start. Stop it. Yep. Stop it now. Go back to one. And I'll see you back here in 3 to 6 months. So we've got an absolute bucket load of questions from our delightful community. So let's jump right in.
Well, actually, to be clear, we have so many questions that we're not going to be able to answer them
all. Not even slightly.
That will be like a 4-hour episode. So,
nobody wants that.
We're going to kind of pick out a grab bag, kind of going to be a bit at random. So if you get read out, great. If you don't, I'm sorry.
We're sorry.
But you didn't.
But this is actually exercising resilience, because you know what? It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You will live on. Our hearts.
In order to teach everybody a lesson, that's the end of the episode.
Sorry about
and
that.
And I hope you've all learned something.
Well, okay. Right, so the first question is from Tomato. How difficult is it to keep the main storyline without going off on large tangents? Or has the end goal changed since you started? How do we not go off on large tangents? Well, we do.
Yeah, we run a very disciplined show and... End of question.
Yeah, I think that there is a certain element of we've built into the very core and structure of the show the fact that that does not matter, because the main storyline is developed out in little soupçons and little dollops, so that when we spend 20 minutes talking about nothing in particular, it doesn't matter.
Yes, we have a vague plan, and then at the start of a season, we sit down and we go, okay, well, that's where we ended up. How do we get to where we want to go?
Yeah,
and then we kind of work it out from there. Things have changed. as we go. Mm. But also just because, not because we've gone and said weird stuff that we have to factor in, but also because just our idea of what we want to do has changed.
And also sometimes because we said something weird, looked at each other and thought, you know what, that's better than what we thought.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, it's like a healthy combination of the two. The tangents are the story, right?
Sorry, I don't mean to blow your mind, but the tangents are the story. Both doing hand gestures that won't come across in the on audio format. Pow!
We make it up as we're going along.
Kabloom! Right, next question. Your choice.
Okay, I'm going to take a question from Eddie Sourboy, who asks, does Trexel have any formal education? He talks a lot about going to school as a boy, but did he graduate, go to space college, or is he just guessing about everything all the time? I think, to be more accurate, it's more he's lying about everything all the time.
Yes.
But what is a lie except a dishonest guess?
It's a guess that you know you're wrong about.
Yeah.
I think he's got compulsory education. It is formal, but it's very much you are being, you know, put through a Rube Goldberg, like the music na 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 would be playing. Who is that? Raymond something or other.
I don't know.
Somebody will be listening to this and screaming the second name of the composer, Raymond that guy, who did all of those like Looney Tunes songs. But yeah,
the Looney Tunes Rube Goldberg machine man.
Rube Goldberg is a completely different man.
No, I know, but the Rube Goldberg machines are usually what that guy composed that song to. That song is typical, is like the Rube Goldberg machine theme, effectively.
Yes, and I think it's called like Power Plant or Power Station. This is one of those tangents we were talking about. So we've
factored it into the story of the episode, and so that is our craft. Yeah.
That is our craft. So like you're forced to go to primary school, but you don't graduate from primary school. It just sort of ends and they ask you not to come back. And I think that's what happens. Is that what happens? They just send you away at the gates when you're 7 years old and say, don't come back.
You think we end primary school at 7 years old?
I took a guess and I
you
got
did
it. I know.
It happened to you.
I can't remember. Like most things, I can't
12
remember.
12 to 13.
Well, there you go. Asked and answered. Right, yeah. Next question. Let's go for this one from Fire. How did David keep getting materials for his hobbies, especially in the expediting basement? So I'm assuming this refers to your crafting materials and various doohickeys.
Yeah, sure.
How, Ben?
Yes.
Answer me.
So here's a little thing that feels like when people notice details in the shows and then start being like, gosh, is that a meaningful decision they've made? The answer is no.
Brackets sometimes.
Yeah, but it's some guff that we've made up. So if there are inconsistencies and mistakes and things that don't quite make sense, yeah, just go with the flow, right?
I disagree. I think what Ben said there is in no way factually correct, and I have some deep lore to lay on you.
Oh, in which case, you'll be fine to field this question.
Yeah. I think what happens in my truth, personally, for me, for my truth, it's basically stuff's like blowing around in the vents and like falling into places, and like, you know, it's sort of like a trash basement, you know, a trash hole basement, so like just some crap falls through a pipe in the ceiling, and David's like, oh, that's kind of like, I don't know, crepe paper, and then makes a lovely paper bath in. See, isn't the world a bit more magical now?
Wow, what a master.
I am.
A master of the craft at work.
I'm a craft master. Craftsman, as you might say.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, I'm going to ask one from Dusty.
Dusty.
Have either of you ever worked in sales? As in, were any of Trexel's techniques inspired by real life experiences?
Oh, dear me, yes. Oh, a tale as old as time, a song as old as rhyme. Sales is a hellhole. I've largely had sales-based jobs because I have no real skills, and therefore sales is the only place for Tim to make money. I remember when we sat down to plot that, and I think I looked at old documents that I'd had shared with me from old jobs about like sales tactics and the five steps to sales success and all those horrifying toe-curling, eye-gouging things that you have to look at when you work in a job with any sort of sales. And we cribbed them sort of directly from there. And then I did the subtext to them, which is like lying and dishonesty and manipulation.
Yeah, you turned the subtext into supertext.
It was cathartic. I'm going to tell you that. It was cathartic. luckily, dear listener, I now work in a company that, whilst my job has got sales in it, the people that make me do it are nice. And so I get to do it in a nice way with, like, not trying to trick people. Because that's a lot of sales and it's horrible. And that's why I move jobs.
So there you go.
Short answer. In one job, I need to talk about this. In one job that I got directly out of university because they were like, "Oh, you're young and stupid," was one of these ones where they were like, "Oh, there's a government scheme where you can get insulation put in the walls of your house." And that's a real thing that happens because the government wants people to have insulated houses. The thing is, though, what you need to do is send somebody who has a bloody clue what they're doing to your house to check if you should have it, rather than giving a drill to an idiot and saying, "Drill into this stranger's wall." And people let me do it. And looking back on it, A, I shouldn't have done it, and B, people should not have let me into their house. I clearly had no idea what I was doing. Anyway, that's just something that shocks me. Like, once a week, I remember that was my job while I was, like, you know, 20, and think, why was any of that the case?
See, I had a very similar one where there was a government scheme to put solar panelling. Well, it's because you've got these good, like, subsidies and stuff, but they, you know, they just let any old person have a go at it, and a lot of people spin up companies to take advantage of it.
They really lack follow through on the whole
thing. Yeah, we just sort of, I was supposed to cold call people and confuse them into getting solar panels put on. And
horrifying.
Then keep them in a holding pattern because we were supposed to install them but never did. And then eventually the ex-banker, surprise, surprise, owner of the company, folded the company and just sold all of the details to, like, his mate who ran a bigger company.
Oh, wow. You were part of some proper fraud.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Hey, kids, don't study the arts.
He got one of his ex-banker mates to come in and try and intimidate all the students into, like, towing the line when we were like, "Is this wrong?" And he was like, "If you want to make it in this business..." And at that point, I said, "This is nice.
I am quitting now.
Goodbye.
I don't want to make it in this business. Thank you for opening my eyes."
Yeah. Also, you, as a man, are deeply pathetic and you make me sad in my soul. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
You're literally shouting at, like, a 21-year-old person who's got a temp job. What's wrong with you? This is not the Wolf of Wall Street.
So what you need to do is you need to study software engineering and then go work for a lovely company like, oh, I don't know, BAE Systems. You know, something nice and above board.
BAE Systems, for those people who don't know, is...
terrifying defence company.
Yes, British Aeronautic Engineering.
Yeah, they also do just make planes and stuff. Anyway, we're off topic again.
Yeah, planes. These are famous and also tangents. Missiles.
And also missiles. Because you know what? What's a missile except a plane where all the passengers explode?
I think maybe actually specifically targeting systems for missiles. So the things that really make sure the missiles blow the people up.
Okay, so our next question...
That's all part of the story of the episode,
It's all part of the story.
We're going to call back to it. It's going to be incredible.
So this is a question from many people. I don't think that's a handle. I think Anil, a very helpful collator of these questions...
Lots of people.
Have asked, and I'd be interested to see what you think of this, Ben. What was your favourite thing about this season?
Swole David.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just Swole David.
Yeah, and the fact that the detail we added that he doesn't actually get physically any larger, he just becomes more dense.
Yeah, that is pretty
good.
And
the reason that was is because we realised that we couldn't have him becoming bigger because then it has to be like something that people refer to and we won't remember to do that.
Nope.
So we're like, externally, he looks exactly the same and here is the definite sensible reason why that is the case.
So if it gets forgotten, then that's why. And if it gets suddenly mentioned out of the blue, that's also why.
Yep.
We're golden!
Yep.
My favourite bit was where I had to sort of work with, I think in the end, both Maddie and Alex to get the sound of, and when I say work with, I kept saying, "Can you do it?" And they eventually said yes. To get the sound of Trexel tobogganing on David down a pile of letters with included slalom movements. That was, yes, apparently that has given me some notes for season three that run roughly, hey, when you think something's funny, that's great, but also think about how much work it will be to soundscape, because that joke took up about as much time as the rest of the episode put together in terms of trying to make it work. Hey, kids, don't sound engineer. It seems like a horrifying, horrifying thing to have to do.
I think you and Johnny have managed to get the same note at this point, which is just Alex going,
"Can you make
why
it simpler?
Are you giving me so much work?"
Yes. Yes. I also set the previous two episodes in realms full of paper. And again, turns out having to make every movement correspond with a paper rustling noise, lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work. People don't like it when you do it.
I'm actually, to be honest, thinking of that, the other favourite bits was genuinely working with the guests, because they were all great.
They're all great. And I think we'll be seeing some familiar faces in season 3, and maybe some new ones. I'll never tell. I mean, yes, probably. Like, we're probably going.
Moving on. Yeah, let's ask this one from Muddy Hippie, which is, given the whole molten slurry melting off David's onesie and the subsequent banishment to the expedition basement, I got confused. I was like, expediting. But it is expedition, isn't it?
It is. It is confusing, and we named it badly, and I'm sorry for everyone's trouble.
You're the one who wanted to make a reference to Stalinist Russia.
You always have to make it. What do you want me to make a reference to? Trotskyist Argentina? That's not a thing. He just lived there. On you go.
Given the whole molten slurry melting off David's onesie and the subsequent banishment to the expedition basement, has David Seven been stuck in his loincloth this entire time? He must be so cold. To assume that David has a loincloth, you sweet summer child.
Nude slimy boy! Yeah, how do you think the slime gets everywhere?
Yeah.
If there's a onesie in the way.
No, I mean, you remember what we were saying about small details that we just say and then don't really think about? Yes, okay, fine. It turns out we accidentally established a naked David for the entire time.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a little Easter egg for those eagle-eared listeners.
Do you know what now? Now that we've had to say that, that's your fault. And you're going to have to deal with the consequences of your own actions.
Please forward all of the now alarming art to muddyhippie@gmail.com. That might be somebody's real email address. Please don't do that.
It's definitely somebody's real email address.
Yeah, well.
Oh, but also, sorry, to very swiftly give a more sensible answer. No, he has a onesie. We forgot. Maybe clones grow onesies out of their skin. Maybe that's something we'll make Maddie soundscape.
You heard it there, Maddie. It's Ben's fault when that now happens.
Yeah, I didn't get the note. Tim got the note.
Moving on. So, this question is from Psy brackets Moose are so cool. It's hard to read words when they're all one
Moose
word.
Moose is so cool.
Moose is so cool. So that's Psy brackets Moose is so cool. Did Hartrow go to school with Trexel Bathin and Paxt Bloody Scrum?
I forgot about Paxt Scrum.
How long did she have to suffer Trexel's presence? My serious answer to this is that I get the feeling that they are quite different in age. I think Trexel's probably quite a bit older than Hartrow. One of the many indignities that Trexel chafes under is the fact that he's, you know, been doing this for quite a long time and is quite a bit older than most of the other people at his level, and therefore his line manager is sort of substantially younger than he. So I suspect that Hartrow would have gone to school sort of later.
I don't really have any conception of how old Trexel is, because quite frankly, I don't want to know. He's one of those people that you're like, whatever the answer is, it's going to be upsetting. Like, it doesn't matter what the answer is, but for some reason it will be upsetting. So I don't want to know.
It'll turn out that he has an age, but he stole it from a dying child. Yeah, something like that.
But that's a question as well. Did Hartrow go to the same institution as...
No, they probably wouldn't. They probably wouldn't have, because there'll be like, you know, the consultants and like the high-end people, and then the line managers, which are sort of like the analogue to the British middle classes, and then there'll be the build team school, which is a bit more like a BTEC or something.
Yeah, it's like a polytechnic. Not that those exist anymore, but you know.
No, and not that they were actually worse. That was just some rank snobbery.
Yeah.
But yes, that was...
It's because you went there to learn to do things with your hands?
What? Do you not have a buckler
Disgusting.
Or perhaps large handkerchief?
Yeah.
Do you not work in finance?
Yeah.
You pervert. Come on. Right, next question. Ben's choice. You've discovered a gem.
Well, it's just, I think, one you're going to enjoy. From Lainey JP. Tim, do you and Amy sing all the time? Ben, do you also break out in song? And also, Ben, what is on your bookshelf? The chat at Gehenna Gaming VHC was obsessed with trying to read your bookshelf.
So let's take this in stages.
Yes.
Tim, do you and Amy sing all the time? I sing almost constantly, much to the irritation of Amy, up until the point it's something she likes, at which point she joins in with Wild Abandon. So it's sort of like, if we're giving it, like, 10 is constantly singing so you never speak, I'm at like a 7, because, you know, sometimes I'm like making work calls, can't sing in them. and then Amy's probably like a 5 or a 6. A lot of singing, but a bit less. And Ben, where would you sit on that Beaufort scale of singing?
Probably at a 3. Breaking out in song is not unheard of, but I only do it in very specific situations.
Sure.
To be honest, mostly when talking to you, in an effort to keep up. And sometimes I will sing stupid songs at Rach to annoy her.
There you go. Asked and answered. It. Now, on to the second part about books and stuff.
What is on my bookshelf? Just a lot of British white nerd genuinely. Like, it's one of those things where through recent events, a lot of people have been like, hey, what's on my bookshelf? And it turns out it's a bunch of white men.
Online.
You know, you got your Ian M. Bankses. Oh, that's not entirely true. I've got the Rivers of London stuff.
That's
Ben Aronovich. Oh, the Edge Chronicles, which are great. I've got, you know, the His Dark Materials, Douglas Adams. I've got the Dark Forest and the Three Body Problems from Cixin Liu.
Yep.
A bit of Donna Tartt.
It's not too bad then.
It's pretty bad. A Shelf of Terry Pratchett. It's also about what the proportion. Like, Ian M. Banks, I've got like 12 books.
Yeah,
Terry Pratchett, obviously, I've got like 40.
I think, Pratchett and Banks between them are really skewing their numbers.
Really take up an awful lot of space. Like a bunch of I've got the classic. I used to be an English literature student, so I've got The Odyssey, The Iliad, Dante's Inferno, A Christmas Carol, Hans Christian Andersen's Fairy Tales, which I actually bought independently, The Story of My Life by Casanova, which is Rach's. We've got a crap load of Philippa Gregory. Rach reads a lot more like varied people. Like, I can't just name an author and name like 10 books that apart from Philippa Gregory that Rach owns. So, but anyway, there you go. Nothing too exciting.
There you go.
Yeah,
so I hope you're all bored by that because it's nothing too exciting. Right, this is a question from Lena. The question is, what do you do when you run out of ideas? Or does that just not happen because you're just so good at this?
I mean,
exclamation mark, smiley face.
It doesn't happen because Tim doesn't stop.
Well, it does. It does happen because if anyone has listened to the bloopers, you will hear how many times I start speaking, get to the middle or second third. Yes. The third third of a sentence.
Two thirds of the way through.
Thank you. Two thirds of the way through a sentence and realize I've got nowhere to go with this. And I just either peter out, swear or yell something. And sometimes the yelling just fits right in. But yes.
To be honest, though, Tim, that isn't because you've run out of ideas. That's because you've realised the idea you've had is bad.
That's a good point, yeah.
It's not like there's no idea there.
There's
I mean,
an
I
idea.
Will actually, I will sometimes run out of ideas. I will stare at you and go, give me a second.
Hang on a mo.
That'll happen.
Yeah, okay, so I suppose the thing is, we don't run out of ideas, we just often run out of good ideas.
Yes.
Which is why this is semi-improvised and not entirely improvised. Right, what one would you like to go for?
We'll go for a simple one. Oh, hey, look at this nerd, says, is the character of Trexel Geisman in any way inspired by Zaphod Breebelbrox? And do you think they get along?
Weirdly, I think no.
Oh, I was going to go for yes.
As much as I can see in retrospect, that character, beyond, and again, who can say subconsciously, but like, I'm normally pretty sure of what I'm doing, which is such a broad sentence. I'm pretty sure of what I'm doing. I've only in retrospect been made aware of the fact that, yes, he is sort of like a gadabout, allergic to responsibilities, space ding-dong. So, yes, it is sort of quite similar, but as far as I can think of, I didn't think, oh, I'll make a Zaphod Breebelbrox, despite the fact we were 100% doing a Magrathea type thing.
Oh, yeah, we're not pretending there wasn't any Adams. Also, I think there is one aspect where he absolutely was based on that.
Oh, really?
Which is where you wanted to have your cocktail. The Flaxen Whisk, because that was your intergalactic Gargle Blaster. And
yes.
I think we specifically referenced the Gargle Blaster when we were like thinking of what he should be drinking.
That's true. But I suppose that was like, wouldn't it be good if he had something like, as opposed to, we need a character, let's make him a Zaphod.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just that there's that like one little bit where we did.
And do you think they would get along? No! Like two egos of that size would just like, it's like when you drop a bomb to put out a fire, they'd both die. That metaphor is apt, I say. Apt. That's, might be a simile.
Oh, too apt.
Too apt. Too apt, bro.
Yeah, one of yours.
Sam the Quiche asks, are clones important enough to Stella Firma that they would try to make a clone the ideal human? If so, does Stella Firma prioritise genetic advantages, better problem solving, more cooperative disposition, etc., or would they make clones as aesthetically pleasing as possible?
So I like that this question has dressed up in many words what is the fundamental question, which is, are clones sexy?
Reading
between the lines.
Sexy.
That is what's really been
when a clone here. Walks past, the heads turn and people say, dang, look at that clone.
Yeah.
Is that happening? I think clones are incredibly important to Stella Firma in their function, but I feel like Stella Firma holds them in complete contempt. Like, I think it's that weird mix of like these things mean that we can work at all, but I'm better than you and I don't care.
It's how you don't pay attention to, like, the paving slabs beneath your feet as you walk along a path.
So therefore, I think the genetic advantages would be, like robustness and replaceability and cheapness. It's like, you know,
yeah,
they're like products from the brand Rubbermaid. Like, they're not amazing, but they're, like, tough and utilitarian and they do the job and they're not expensive.
I mean, also, you can imply how much they value them and what they prioritise them with them. First of all, because of the ease with which David could be recycled.
Yes,
because
true.
That, like, Trexel is bad, but Trexel didn't make it easier for things to recycle. He just puts clones in the position where they need to be recycled more often than other people.
Yeah.
And secondly, go back to episode one and listen to the things that Imogen begins to instill in David Seven if you want to know what the priorities are. I'm pretty sure one of them is classical dance. So
could be classical and modern tap, I believe. It might just be classical and modern. I wrote it, but it was 2 years ago now. I think it's classical and modern.
Yeah. But there are a few things there which are more pertinent than the obvious joke, which is classical and modern dance.
Yes, but
it's a joke, but it is true in canon because we wrote it.
Yes.
So it's happening. And that is, like, canonically something
the
that
other
I guess
clones
know. Yeah.
Beautifully.
It's like bloody La La Land out there.
Oh, man, in that it should not have won an Oscar. Next question. I believe this is your choice.
Yeah, from Mac and Cheese. During their time in the sales department, David Seven and Trexel were told by each client what animal they would be if they were one. If David Seven and Trexel were animals, what would they be? And I think you should answer for David and I should answer for Trexel.
Okay, I think David would be like a minnow, a small, insignificant fish that's always on the brink of being eaten by a whale.
Wow.
Sorry, no, that's just mean. It would be something quite flighty. Something maybe like some sort of slightly emaciated crane, like sort of, you know, that sort of like quite poised and spindly, but like a bit angular and unsure. Maybe like a concussed crane. Like it could be elegant and beautiful, but because of its many injuries, it is not. You're a concussed crane. I hope you enjoy it.
I think that Trexel is some kind of like really angry crab.
Get away!
Yeah, because it's like kind of like acts on instinct, sidles a lot of places. Yeah, it's quite bitey and will lash out. But when you crack through his hard shell, he has an incredibly soft and gooey interior.
And I will die if you crack through my shell. Don't crack through my shell.
But by that, we do mean like not splitting literally Trexel in half, as in if anybody ever gets to the core of Trexel, he may well just explode out of, I don't know, embarrassment.
Don't look in there, kaboom!
If anyone allows Trexel to realise the kind of person that Trexel is...
Oh, no. No, thank you. No, thank you. Okay, this is a question from Kato, a.k.a. Kato. This season you took two types of submission from the audience, planet pitches and complaints. What was the goal behind that decision and how do you feel it worked compared with season one?
The goal behind that decision was we got to the end of season one and said, hey, we did 25 planets and... we don't want to start repeating ourselves because eventually we will run out of good planet ideas. Because even within a remit as wide as Build a Planet, it's still quite limiting.
Yeah, it can get stale, especially when it's, you know, it's you and me. We're on the third episode of a run in a recording session. You want some variety, something to spin off of that's a little bit different.
Yeah, and like I think we had the two different things because I think we planned it in the story of season two, right? We knew that they were going to get busted down to a different department.
Yeah.
And then it was just a case of like, oh, well, that would be fun as well, because it means we get to change things up, right? Because I think we were both feeling like all of the episodes in season one were, I think, you know, pretty good.
If we do say so ourselves.
If we do say so ourselves. But I think we definitely both understood that we were maybe struggling a little bit towards the end. Like, it didn't flow as freely as it did at the start, because we were a bit like, oh, well, we kind of done a lot
of stuff.
You've sort of done this.
Yeah, you start having to quickly check back to see if you've kind of already... Especially when it's a two-prov, and there's, like, you know, at that stage, 10 hours of material that you've done. Like 10 full hours of talking, and you're like,
and we
can we remember?
We can't remember like the episode we did previously.
I prefer not to. I like to feel it fresh. Like, I'm like Memento in that way.
You start tattooing episodes on your body.
I do, which is why after a while I changed the format so it looked more pleasing.
Yeah.
Because people have also asked, this isn't the question that we've been asked, but there's like a question of like in season one, why the titles started becoming alliterative. And it was because at a certain point I did one and went, oh, that's better. So they're just wildly inconsistent halfway through. They just change. Yeah. Change because I thought I want to do that. And nobody stopped me or noticed for quite a while.
There you go.
Right, next question.
Okay, so this is a quick one, actually, from Eden. Was Enola's name being alone backwards intentional?
No, this is the first time I'm hearing of this.
Helen named Enola, so
no,
ask
I named
Helen.
Enola. I
you
named
named Enola.
Enola.
I thought
named...
Helen named Enola.
No, I'm pretty sure. I hope I'm not biting her style.
Know.
No, I'm pretty sure because Enola also had a second name that never made it into the show or onto the notes, just through a complete oversight on my part.
What's Enola's second name?
I think it's something like Cloudenhammer. But yeah,
oh, right, okay.
never noticed that it was alone backwards. And that is apt and kind of freaky, you know? Hey, man, if what I call is red, it looks like red to me. When I say red and you see a different colour, are we talking about red? You know, it's that sort of stuff.
Wow.
Wow. Think about it.
Anyway, it's your question.
This is a question from Tescont. What was the puddle in the expediting office? Did Trexel slurp a clone? So I think you mentioned this at some point. I can't remember if it was in recorded fashion or if it was just in real life. But no, I don't think. I kind of like the idea that that is the case, that there's a big puddle of like clone DNA juice, like clone medium that just happened to be on the floor for the whole of that section and no one realised.
Pretty grim.
I think that was just a leaky roof fluid. Like
maybe it was Mez Hecra's assistant.
Oh no.
Who just waited there until they dissolved.
They dissolved into nothingness.
Yeah.
But no, it I don't believe it's because the puddle of clone gum that you stepped in the sorting.
Yeah, it's not
office,
very slurpable. It was more of a glue.
There
sort
was more of a gloopy
thing.
Glue. Which because you know, there's gotta be a lot of polymers in a clone to make it all turgid. You've gotta have a turgid clone.
I'm not going there.
Coward.
So garlic bread and onions, which is a strange combination, honestly, I think. But, you know,
ask the French. I'm pretty sure that's some sort of, like, starter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Garlic bread and onions?
I think you should open up your bloody horizons, mate.
Fair enough. It sounds like an American thing to me, to be honest. But anyway, what are both Ben's and Tim's favourite niche details of Stella Firma?
What's a good... I don't know. Have you got anything that comes to mind?
I think, like, it's not exactly a niche detail, because it's pretty in there, but the fact that everyone travels everywhere by tube.
An often tube that is accessed via hatch door in the floor.
Yeah.
There was a beautiful lost detail that didn't make it into season two because it didn't make sense. But at a certain point, we were going to get busted down again or something like that at the end of season two.
We
were going to have a big hammer come out of the ceiling and literally bust us back down to somewhere.
We were going to get busted so fast big... back down to like, yeah.
To Buck Private.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now that's not a niche detail because that isn't canon. That didn't happen. There are no ceiling hammers as far as we know. So yeah. So my favorite niche detail is something that is not really technically a detail because it's not in it. I like, and there's a little bit of ambiguity around this because everything that Trexel says is to be taken with a pinch of suspicion. But the fact that maybe the reason that Trexel doesn't like Bathit is because they went to school together. Bathin was nice, but Trexel has such a persecution complex that angered him, and he imagined that Bathin was like bullying him and like has false memories of him like giving him swirlies and pulling his trousers down in class or something like that, where Bathin was actually just nice, but you know, Trexel's warped, upsetting mind has curdled that niceness into that, which is why he sort of has this super aggressive anger towards Bathin, but also kind of is aware that Bathin is great and he should really like Bathin, and Bathin's nothing but nice.
Mm.
But then what is truth?
It's also double fake because also this all took place in like a virtual reality, right? Because
yes, we're all in sort of like grow tubes with bit helmets on.
School pod school.
Very, very small class sizes in that it's only your brain.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. Okay, this is from the Geistman Experiment. I think they're a fan. How long did it take you to find the character voices, and do you sometimes struggle to find the voice again after having not used it for a while? No.
Yeah,
I have found the Trexler voice creeping into my life in a substantial and upsetting way because it's too close to my regular voice. It's just me, but gravelly. I don't find it hard to find again. Do you struggle to find it again, Ben? And then we'll answer the first bit.
No, I mean, not to find it. I often find it, I think I'm getting better at it, but I often find it a struggle to sustain it. Like I will kind of...
You go Grizzop. You do a Grizzop sometimes.
Well, no. I mean, not usually, because Grizzop's like quite significantly different.
You still sometimes accidentally do it at the start of a recording session, though.
All right, yeah. Well, okay, yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, no, but it's also like, as we're recording, I'll start like really, really obviously, like really up here, and then I'll just slowly kind of, you know, sort of it'll become more natural, and then I'll basically, there was like one episode where I was just doing my own voice.
Yeah, we have to be.
Because I'm a professional.
There's definitely some B-roll where you just say things as yourself and we were like, I think you might need to do your character voice at some point, Ben, because, you know, you're playing someone.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I can always immediately do David. Like, that's fine. It's just remembering to continue to do David.
And to be fair, I think there are some points, especially when Trexler is quieter, because a lot of Trexler's character is basically volume and force. So we're like, he's like, ow, oh, this and that. But when you go down to sort of a quieter pitch, it's not actually that much different from me just whispering. You know, it's not, there's not a lot there. It's mostly sort of like angularness of intonation. Like he's with Trex, it's always like da 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 aha da do. You know what? We should do a whole episode where it's just basically like interpretive scat singing.
Oh yeah, so we're like ah
da 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 da. Okay. Next question.
When did it?
Oh no, hang on.
Man, are they?
We didn't answer. How long did it take us to find them? Like in the first place. I think Trexler was relative, again, because it's not that different to me, was relatively the same from the start. But we had quite a different David, didn't we?
It was I think it was we were doing something and then Alex said, hey, you both sound the exact same.
Yes.
So do something different.
In fact, yes, I did mine and you were like a very toned down version. And then we sounded the same because the wonderful thing about when you export something as an MP3 is it cuts all of the tops and bottoms and then there's compression. So all of the volumes get equalized and then everything sounds like everything else because of audio magic.
We didn't struggle to find it. It's more we tried one thing, we're told that doesn't work. So I was like, okay, so I'm just going to do Richard Iowardi then.
Yeah.
Okay. I will just do Richard Iowardi then.
Iowardi this thing right up.
Yeah.
Right, next question.
So this one's from Indrid. Can we get a quick pronoun rundown of the main characters? Yeah, it'd be super helpful to know who goes by what.
Hmm. And there's an interesting foible in this one, but I'll mention it when we get to it. Which might be pretty quickly. So Trexel's definitely there. Definitely he, him. David's an interesting one that I mentioned earlier, I hope you remember, because I think to start off with, you were sort of he, him, but then asserted your gender as David.
Yes.
And then obviously the fandom has very much sort of got behind, you know, third gender is David, sort of, no, or there's two genders, David and David, things like that, you know.
Well, that's effectively, I mean, gender as David is like pronouns, no, like don't use pronouns.
Exactly.
But then obviously, yeah, this is one of the issues with the improv'd thing, and also, to be honest, us not thinking it through, like, from the off, because we've never really established pronouns for David. Like, I think, obviously, we default to he, him, because Ben uses he, him, and I'm playing David, and we're looking at each other when we're doing
it. I've known you for quite a while, so the he, him is sort of quite indelibly marked into my old brain.
Yeah, and we have never said, like, okay, well, this is what David's pronouns are.
Yeah.
And like obviously I did the David thing first of all because like it was a funny joke, but also because, you know, why would he have a conception of what gender, because I think I've said this before, but gender is a social construct and David has not been part of that social construct, so
the joke is he would say David because he doesn't know what he, him, or she, her, or they, them is. They're just David.
Well, also not only not knowing what they are, but not seeing very much the point of it.
Yeah, yeah. But it is so hard to get away from pronouns. Like even in that sentence, he thought he was gender David. It's very, very difficult to get away. Yeah. And as you say, it was never. It's more sort of emerged by accidents. Having said that, I'm very much not unhappy that we've ended up with a character that is sort of a little bit more gender agnostic or, you know, gender question mark, because hey. that's a nice thing to have in the show.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to pretend like we've specifically and purposefully done something.
No.
It's like, no, this is it's grown out of like circumstance. But yeah, like definitely it's also influenced like the way like David in my head is that like, yeah, broadly, David is broadly gender fluid now.
Yeah.
Because he'll probably answer to he, they, David.
Yeah, and is a clone. So may have no identifiable sex organs of any kind.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know what junk is going down in his trunk.
And he's never looked inside his loincloth.
Actually, I have.
Have you?
Yes, there is. I think there's a specific, in season one, at some point, I think I looked down my trousers.
Oh, no.
And I react to something, but we don't know what
that
thing is.
We don't know what. Maybe it was just a happy little face.
Maybe it was.
Hartro, yeah, I think is a she, her. Standards, I think, is more specifically a they, them. And I think that was, again, because less to be like, hey, look, we've got, you know, not gender-specific characters, but more like, if I'm thinking about it conceptually, they're the kind of characters who are like, this is not a thing. You know, this is not a concern of ours. Thank you very much. So
not important to our identities. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah.
But also, to be clear, not in like a dehumanizing way.
No.
Like, because their names are number one and number 48, so you can definitely like read it like that. But that's definitely not intent.
It was much more an idea of, would they be male? I don't know. Would it matter? Would they be female? I don't know. Would it matter? Well, shall we just avoid pronouns? Okay. Because, you know, it's like, why must one assign one when it kind of doesn't matter to anything to do with the plot or story or world or character? So there we are. So
they are non-binary individuals who are cohabiting.
Yeah. And it's very possible.
Definitely in a relationship.
Yes, an increasingly tense relationship. And it's very possible, because again, we haven't planned any of this out. It's very possible we've committed some faux pas or accidental, like, oh, did you not know that this is actually a thing within this world that is, you know, bad or misunderstood? So if there is anything like
that. Yeah, that's
like
one thing. Please
let
tell
us. Because we are ignorant.
Yeah. If we got opportunity to learn, grand.
Yes, and we have had a couple very helpful people where we have misgendered someone in a suggestion who have said, "Hey, you've misgendered someone," and it's meant we can just skip back and I do a quick 3-second re-record and Maddie pastes over the mistake and that's quite helpful. Thank you very much to those who have done that, though I can't remember their name right now. Right, let's do...
Well, more characters.
Oh, gosh,
right? Do we have
characters.
Any... Well, I mean, obviously, at this point, we've got characters who I don't think we've really established much at all of.
No.
Because, like, Clytemnestra can...
I think they were cast as a she-her.
Yeah. Enola, I don't think we actually establish any...
Have not established anything there yet. Imogen is an interesting one, because Imogen is a she, but probably in the way that, like, a ship is a she.
Yeah.
Because robots.
The same way that, like, Cortana is a she, and well, I mean, basically most bloody AIs in shows, because
isn't that something around, like, I seem to remember when they're doing the GPS things and it was something like they used women's voices because men didn't like taking instructions about directions from another man, like like they were like, no, I know what I'm doing.
Where men are just so pathetic.
Yeah, it was something genuinely like they just responded very badly because it's like, no, I know where I'm going. Thank you very much, GPS, turn it off.
Good grief.
Now, I'm sure there are plenty of men who are fine taking driving instructions from anyone that would offer them. But
the fact that it's a significant enough portion for them to make that change is pretty damning.
That there's an economic imperative to do that is quite upsetting about the human race. And men in particular.
But then also, like, I guess Harry's a he-him.
Harry's a he-him. Mez Hecra, probably he-him.
Yeah, but again, had, like, one speech, so...
And was probably dead when we heard it. So there you go.
Almost definitely.
Okay, Bumble Slurp. Many U's in there. What TV shows / movies exist in the Stellar Firmaverse? Do they have any new ones? Anything left over from Earth Time?
Nothing left over from Earth Time, very specifically.
Fragments of archival footage, tiny bits here and there that they, you know, misinterpret because there's no context around them.
Yeah, enough for Trexel to get humorously wrong.
Yes, enough for Trexel to get access to Tim's Twitter feed and do a nature walk where, because I have a problem, I filmed things in nature and did commentaries as Trexel to them. You know, that sort of stuff.
But also, like, we very specifically wanted to avoid making explicit references, and like we have, I think we made it clear, and maybe we didn't actually. I don't know, but like we have rejected suggestions because they're too close to like, or to making too much reference to Earth.
Yeah, like I think one referenced Queen Elizabeth II specifically, and it's like, why would we know who that is at this stage? That was 2,000 years ago when the planet blew up with all the files on it.
Yeah, and it's not to the extent where, like, obviously we can't completely divorce ourselves from it, because, I mean, in fiction, Stella Firm originally came from Earth, but also we are two people who live now. So, you know, it wouldn't be very interesting to be like, and a washing machine? What's a washing machine? Okay, well, let's get into that. Or avoid the concept of washing machines and make up some space neologism for it.
And that's very much an improv thing, because there is a good old improv rule of like, when somebody introduces something, it's kind of quite difficult to deal with it if every time they introduce something you go, I don't know what that is, what is that? I don't know what that is. Every now and again, sure, I'm pretty sure we've had a couple of things where you've not known what something is and it's led to a fun explanation.
We have had some very inconsistent knowledge on David's part precisely because of that. Because when it's funny for me to ask, but what is this?
Yeah.
He does. But he will know about everything else.
Yeah.
Until it's convenient for him to not know about something again.
And that's something that a lot of shall we say more well thought out fiction is guilty of, because it's so difficult when you're like, oh, this person like has, I don't know, amnesia or like this, or like they don't know anything. It's like, oh no, but they know everything that's sort of useful for general stuff. Like there's huge categories of things that they know all about, but they don't know the thing that's really sort of important for the plot in a very specific and kind of quite unbelievable way.
Yeah, in a very convenient way. But we didn't really answer all of that question.
We do have new ones because of the holovids.
We've got holovids. We've got like the wrestling planet was specifically to supply that. We had the romance novelist
and we had like the buckets of blood channel, I think, like in the first season.
I think the broad thing is that a lot of entertainment. I mean, we have the Winter Lettuce Collective.
Yeah.
Who make music.
And probably movies.
But I think basically what we have as the consistent rule is that any new media is upsetting.
Because Tim had to think of it whilst being Trexel.
Yes. I mean, also, we do have David's Facts Corner, the hottest new Imogen cast from...
David's Fact cancelled, we heard.
Yeah.
But for Patreons, it's David's Facts Ongoing, along with Trexel Geisman's Unarguable Histories of the Earth.
Yes, David's Facts sporadically ongoing. We should probably record some more of those.
Probably. There's a schedule and we're fine.
From Cy Musa Sokol, is calling Spirograph a graph friend a British thing, Meredith thing, or a Stella Firma thing? It is a thing that meant we didn't have to use Spirograph trademark, but everyone knew that it was Spirograph.
Do we think the Spirograph people are coming after us? No, I think we're probably fine, but it would be weird for there to be brand name Spirograph in this world.
Yeah, as we previously said, we tried to not be very specific. Unfortunately, I wanted to make a very specific reference, so I was like, yeah, sure, they've probably got like some sort of Spirograph thing going on, and it's also funny when you call it a graph friend.
It is funny when I call it a graph friend.
Yeah, it's a convenient inconsistency again on our part.
Oh, that should be some sort of a thing. Convenient inconsistency. That's a good phrase.
That's politics.
Kaboom.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
here's one from Dr. Teya Time. Stella Firma is very bleak when you stop and think about it. # true facts. Do y'all have any guidelines for yourself to keep it from getting too dark, or do y'all just feel it out?
That's the second one.
Second one. Yeah, there's definitely, and I think one of the things I remember from Blooper Season 1 is too dark. That's too dark.
Yes.
There is definitely a lot of, you follow, because the themes are quite dark. And the setting is quite dark and the situation is quite dark. And so often at improvising stuff, you just say something and you're like, you know what? We're supposed to be here for a good time. So let's not talk about this, I don't know, genocide or something. So I think the guideline is, do you say it and then immediately feel regret?
Yeah.
If that happens, probably don't go in the show.
Because yes. I mean, this is a comedy, but as people say, it's not a very happy one.
No.
It's pretty... pretty grim.
Pretty grim.
Sci-fi dystopias tend to be, and if we made it all happy, it wouldn't really be doing a service to that idea.
But hey, I'm sure it'll all be fine in season 3. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it'll be grand. Yeah, it'll be brilliant.
Oh, no.
David will get away. It'll all be brilliant. He'll end up in Bathin's arms. You know, it'll be this lovely, just complete paradise. And yeah. So you guys keep believing that, okay?
Yep.
Cool. Yep, nice.
I think we might have ruined Christmas. I don't know how, but I think we've ruined Christmas.
We've gone full Scrooge. Okay, well, this is one I'm going to kind of give an honourable mention because we've basically already answered it. Bonanza, so like, what's up with standards? Are they married? I mean, they're definitely in a relationship.
Mm.
Are they married?
Consciously coupled, perhaps?
Yeah, like, you know.
Is there marriage? Oh, hang on a minute. Clytemnestra established this. If they have drunk each other's blood, then yes. If they have not, then no. And that's your answer.
And actually, to be honest, thinking of number one and number 48 and how they are with each other, they have definitely drunk one another's blood.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, number 48 has like a special murder hammer, so they are the kind of person who has probably drunk somebody's
that
blood.
No, you know what? I've changed my answer to a previous question. My favourite niche detail is that number 48 has a special murder hammer that they love. They're like, ooh, I can get the hammer, you know, slammy, the torture hammer. Yeah,
okay. Shannon asks, if there have only been seven Davids and Trexel got all of them, does that mean Trexel basically got his own clone batch to ruin?
I think there are runs of clones and they go out for each need. So like if somebody else was ruining clones as quickly, I think Trexel might have got like David's 1, 5, and 9. But the thing is, most people take care of their clones. So yes, Trexel basically gets his own lines of clones, but only because he's going through the stock so quickly that he's basically buying up the whole batch.
Yeah, it's not that the David line is specifically Trexel's line of clones. It's like the David line is the currently active line.
Yeah.
But Trexel's burned through them in what we established, like 7 weeks? Less than
something
7 weeks?
Something like that. The timeline of the show is intensely short.
Yeah.
Which I quite like. Maybe that's my favourite niche detail. No, Tim, commits to one niche detail. It's the hammer. The hammer is the one I like.
And you've already changed it once.
I have. You know what? It's something else. So I think it's, yeah, not intentionally, but yes, by accident. And they're not to ruin. He's not supposed to ruin them. They're not his to ruin, but they are ruined.
Well, I mean, they're dead.
I'm going to do my own honourable mention, and then my proper question. My honourable mention is from Silene. I believe it's pronounced Silene or Silon. To the closest dozen, how many murders has Trexel committed? None have been proved. Next question. This is interesting, and I can't remember a lot of this, so I'd be interested to see if Ben knows. This is from Suspiciously Gay. To ask the real questions here, where on earth is Trexel's long-lost brother?
Who?
Who? Do I have a long-lost brother? Did I mention I have a long-lost brother?
I mean, I assume so, because they're asking a question about it.
Well, maybe this isn't my full question, because I was hoping Ben would be like, yeah, oh yeah, no. Tim, remember this?
I have no idea. I mean, you had a clone that got taken away, but your long-lost brother? You might have to dig into the archives.
You have to dig into the archives.
Maybe we'll have to find that detail and bring it back for season 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's just me doing a Trexel voice.
Oh, no. How awful. But would Trexel's brother actually be really quite nice? And again, it just
With his voice.
Really compounds the point that Trexel is just the f***ing worst.
Yeah, there's like, sure, you had bad circumstances, Sunshine, but you chose to be like this.
Okay. Yep, I think that's probably enough for one lifetime.
Yes, well, sorry to those we didn't get to.
There are loads of you. There's like 60 questions here.
Yeah, genuinely, we got through about a third of them. So, I mean, although we'll say, oh, and then you'll have a 3-hour-long episode, and then people will be like, yes, we want that. But
you don't.
Honestly,
we'll run out of steam by about two hours in, and then it won't be fun anymore. So thank you very much for joining us for this season 2 Q&A. Obviously, we'll be having some Q&As at the end of season 3. So if you wanted to ask a question or your question wasn't read out, don't worry. You only have about 9 to 12 months to wait. So the time will just fly by if you consistently re-listen to Stella Firma on as many different devices as you can locate. So it's goodbye from Tim. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Ben. Farewell.
You had to make it different.
Of course
didn't
I did, because
you
tried to make. You couldn't just... You're the one who set the thing up. You started doing a thing.
This is over now.
Stella Firma is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 4.0 international license.
Hi everyone, Alex here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons:
Elizaveta, Rossworm, Mercer, Eat, Amy Pram, Christian Ottholm, Tony, Ellis Beale, Jadej, A Ninja, A New Name, Sharon Grafton, Eloise Sherrod, Leslie Safran, Mars, Stuart Smith, Cyrus Gray, Emma Sandgren, Nicole Stevenson, Meg Taylor, Kareen Lee, Liz, Fushi, Ian Bradley, Fire in the Dark Woods, Dave, The Good China Now, Please, Cher Carlisle, Rashika Rao, Mithy Carlan, Ruth Anderson, Michelle M, Rue Jones, Kayla J, Clara Edmonds, Marimo, Dapper Cyborg, DT, Samantha Minette, Gail, Ashley Dover Kitten, Sieben, Amnesiac Stowaway, Fish, Lisa F, Yaboy Vince, Kaylee Moogle, Christine, Sinsit, Kiera Mortensen, and Meaty Thwack.
Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, it's Imogen, the voice of Imogen from Stella Firma. Today I'm here to tell you about Woebegone, a podcast launched on the RQ network. Woebegone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woebegone follows Mike Waters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woebegone, that's Woe, full stop, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.